You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 573 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller, and we're going to see if Foz joins. I don't know. I think he might have forgotten that we're recording.
That today. Jerk.
Sometimes he just doesn't show up, you know? You got to wake him up, you know?
So used to the global services treatment where he like gets escorted to the plane, even if he misses it, shows up late. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I can't do that. I can't offer that kind of service. It's not in my wheelhouse.
Nah.
It's follow up from last week. I just have like a question for you.
Yeah.
So we talked about the 321, coastliner paint job that United has put on.
Yeah.
Is this a subfleet of Neos then? Are we assuming it's a subfleet?
I think we have to assume it's a subfleet.
I guess we don't have to, but it makes sense. Otherwise, why would you brand it? If you're not changing the interior, why would you brand it?
Yep.
And at this point, I guess the other thing is like the, yeah, I think there's not even anything else. If you're not doing this different interiors, why would you brand it?
Yeah. I mean, this comes back to what Ed kind of had mentioned. And Foz, I think, too. The MAX 10s were supposed to be the Transcon airplane.
Sure.
Then I thought it moved to the XLR, and that's what confused me when they put coastliner on these.
Yeah, no, you don't need to do it on the XLR. Yeah. And so that's where it gets complicated, right? Like the MAX, if you go back far enough, the 752s were the choice because they had premium seats on them, and they didn't have to change anything around, and it was about the right number of seats moving back and forth, arguably, at the time. I need more seats now, but the 752 had, you know, range for the Transcon and then some. You could look at some folks that tried it, Transcon's, you know, not premium layout with a 320 and westbound in the winters got hard.
Yep.
You have some block seats and things like that, but 321 solved that. 321 Neo definitely solves that. MAX 10 can certainly do the Transcon, right? It was basically built as a Transcon airplane, but not a transatlantic one.
Yep.
MAX 8 can do the transatlantic if it needs to. It's got that extra range on it, but fewer seats than the 10. And so I feel like the XLR fit into the, you know, it actually has more range than the 752 did. It is an extra long range plane. That's not really what XLR stands for, right?
It's almost overkill for.
It's too much plane for just running transcons. And
yep.
Like American is using it on the Transcon because it's a place they can sell the premium seats while they have, you know, a small fleet of them and break them into service. But was it Philly Edinburgh is the first international round, I think?
Yeah, I think so. And then we saw Philly Porto's just got announced for next
2027.
Yeah, they announced it now for 2027.
Yeah, announcing a new route 15 months in advance is pretty crazy. But there you go. There's definitely an overkill situation if you use the XLRs just for transcons. Now, if you play United's approach to the 752 back in the day where it was transatlantic plus a little more, maybe it works better that way.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a situation where they're ideally used for the overwater flights, not just the transcons or the Florida turn or the Houston turn. I think Continental did them at one point.
Yeah.
Or they made it like down to Florida, then over to Houston to do Lima, something like that. But
yeah, they would rotate them through. Yep.
Yeah.
It feels like maybe we'll get more seats then. I mean, Ed had brought up a good point, and if I had realized what I was talking about at the time, maybe they'll put more than 20 seats in the plane in J.
And I don't think so.
No, you think that's where? Because I guess
maybe 24, but I think 20 to 24 is the sweet spot on that plane.
Yeah.
And remember, we're expecting a proper premium economy.
Correct. That's the exit row, basically, right?
Yeah, well, but gets you to the exit row. Like I would expect 3-3 from the exit row back.
Yep.
Okay. So as many, you know, mix and match forward of the exit row for 2-2 premium economy and direct aisle access 1-1 angle herringboned lie flats for business. Yep. And Fosbit.
Hey, Fuzz.
Hello.
Singapore Air Show. What's the big story out of Singapore? We don't hear a lot about Singapore typically.
because the Singapore Air Show is pretty quiet typically. Not a lot of big orders, not a lot of crazy news. I think one of Airbus's big order announcements was 4 A320neos to Tiger Air to Taiwan. So, you know, when you can count the number of planes on one hand, the order world is challenged there. But Boeing gave a briefing and offered a few comments. One is that they have a higher max takeoff weight 787-9 and -10 that they expect to deliver first half of this year.
Did they elaborate on how they're making that happen?
I did not see, there's no details in the story I'm reading, but an additional 400 mile range or 5 to 6 tons of cargo. So that's a significant boost to the capacity. And it says that the aircraft involved are already in production.
Yeah. So they've already made the change. So after a certain line number, all of them will be like that.
Yeah. And it's just waiting on, but it's still waiting on certification apparently.
I bet United is thrilled.
I'm chomping at the bit.
And it's appropriate. This was announced at Singapore.
Yeah.
That's where these will go.
I would expect United super happy for it. I'm not joking when I say United would be happy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is something that I think has kept them. They've operated on the edges of the range for a long time with the 789. Yeah. So,
and the other interesting bit is that Reuters reports that it has seen documents suggesting the first production 777X will start its flight testing in April. Although I'm not entirely sure what that means because it's because all the flight testing so far has been on dedicated test frames.
Yep.
Right. So, but they've been building the other frames, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So the planes have been lining up at Everett and at Painfield and Everett. And I guess now they're going to finally start unmothballing some of them to start running through some testing.
I think that's what's going to happen. And then, yeah. And then certification begins, I think.
Well, I mean, in theory, they get certification on the original 5 test frames.
Yeah.
And then once they have that, the others are just ready to go. Obviously, if they have to do rework or changes, that's where things go sideways.
Because I think what scares me is we haven't heard anything about certification. And I guess we usually don't, but it would be nice to hear like, oh, it's, you know, it's in progress. We're making progress. We just haven't heard any of that.
Yeah. And I feel like they like hit another milestone a few weeks ago, but again, it's, you know, moving to another phase. You know, these reports say certified in the back half of the year, but may not enter service until 2027, which I think is what Emirates and Lufthansa have been saying they expect at this point.
Yeah, but they also had a new problem with the engines that cropped up recently. So that might be delayed a little more.
I didn't see that. Interesting.
More engine fun. It's funny, I actually sat next to a guy on the plane coming back from San Diego this week, and he was like, man, airplane engines have gotten so efficient. And I'm like, and more complex. So there's that. What's happening with Spirit's Chicago gates?
Oh, United's buying two of them.
Just two?
They only had two left.
Oh, that's all that's left. Huh? I didn't realize.
They sold, well, they had four. They have four, it's not exclusive, like priority access.
Okay.
Or whatever, the preferred access, that's the word they use. They had four preferred access plus, you know, regular sort of common use gate access. There's a few common use gates at the airport. They sold two of them to American a couple weeks back. It was $30 million to get them through the end of, like, basically for another year, sometime in 2027 if that lease expires.
Mm-hmm.
United snagged the other two.
Wow.
And someone joked on in response to a post of mine about this online was like, well, you see why they're going bankrupt. If they had any business acumen, they would have been like, actually, American still wants them. It's going to cost you 50.
Yeah. It's like you have the negotiating power here.
Yeah. Especially seeing how American and United are fighting there. Like, the gates are worth more than running the flights.
Yes.
Obviously. But Spirit is not bailing on O'Hare. It just thinks it can handle it with its, with the common use gate space.
So are they're basically going to use the common gates and then try and, I guess they'll time their flights to where they don't have to be there with someone else or.
Yeah, I assume O'Hare coordinates it appropriately, but
yeah.
And I should look at how many flights they operate these days. One of the other interesting things that came about from this was someone mentioned they may as well just take Southwest's gates.
Oh, isn't Southwest down quite a bit at O'Hare?
And I had not looked, but Southwest is down quite a bit at O'Hare, basically like half of its peak operations, maybe a third.
O'Hare was not the Strat. Is that what we're hearing?
What we're hearing is it maybe has not been super successful for them. But interestingly, the number of unique destinations they serve seems to be, at least on the published schedule, will go up later this year. Although right now it's down pretty low.
Interesting. So does Southwest own gates? I guess I didn't realize that they had
They have gates over in T5/M.
Okay. So United wouldn't want those.
No.
Or maybe they would.
Do they care? I mean, at this point, they're like everywhere.
I mean, didn't I see they're like at the very end of the F concourse or something?
G. They're all the way in G now, which is Terminal 3. So they're in 1, 2, and now 3, and obviously 5 for arrivals.
And I'm over here complaining about PDX being crowded.
Yeah. Could you imagine the walk from like C26 to G14?
Oh, that'd be awful.
Yeah.
Can you book a flight for that?
It'll be a landline.
They'll run a bus
through Ann Arbor.
Callback.
So then you wanted to talk about caviar.
I did. American is doing a 100th anniversary. You know, all the 100th anniversary stuff is happening this year. American, United, and Lufthansa all celebrating. American is doing a throwback catering play. And so part of that is in April on domestic premium cabins, there's going to be a Waldorf salad, which apparently was all the rage in the 1920s, and beef Wellington. Okay. So hooray for that. And then for like a 6-month window, I think it's March through August or something like that, for international, for flagship first and flagship business, the international stuff, they're doing the beef Wellington, the Waldorf salad, and also April only, which is the centennial month, they're going to have caviar bellinis and a deviled egg with creme fraiche.
But most of this is pre-order only, right?
I didn't see that in the release. Let me go back and check it again.
The meals were for sure, like the beef Wellington.
Okay.
Salad.
That could be. I have the release right here. And a Boursin cream cheese dip on domestic long haul routes. The press release doesn't say pre-order only. Doesn't mean it's not the case.
Yeah, I read somewhere that it was going to be pre-order only, which makes sense.
Yeah. But I come back to classic prawn cocktail will be the appetizer course. This, quote, inspired by the sophistication of 1920s hotel dining, end quote. I just don't know.
I too love Great Depression era food. I mean,
the Depression was in the 30s, Stephen.
But it was the beginning.
Well, this might appease everyone who's been wanting the good old days of flying.
Yeah.
Waldorf salad.
I hate a Waldorf salad.
Yeah, I hate it so much.
Growing up, my mom used to say, hate is a very strong word. And let me tell you, I feel that way about a Waldorf salad.
Oh, no. Yeah. Crisp grapes. It's
apples.
Apples, celery. There's grapes in a Waldorf salad as well.
Also, and then walnuts, too.
Walnuts. It's just wrong on so many levels.
Anyway, but like, I put this on the topic list of, I also don't understand the obsession with caviar.
I mean, it's supposed to be high class, right? It takes a lot to produce.
It's expensive because getting good stuff, like, I mean, the fish and the whatever. Right? Okay, fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's,
I mean, it's interesting because, like, Swiss does the Balak salmon and first, right, instead of the caviar. And I actually find that to be more enjoyable, personally.
I think it's a more flavorful experience. And I've said this for a long time, like a premium fish thing.
Yep.
I actually had this conversation, now I'm going to try to remember how long ago, with like what the guys who ran the smokehouse in Norway that makes the fancy ass smoked salmon that's served on airplanes.
Yeah.
There was like one, and they were I think Aircraft Interiors, the catering side of the event. And I like stopped by and was chatting with them for a while, what they do. And like, there's one company that basically makes everything because they have the clearances to produce it globally for the aviation world. But, you know, basically my thought was like, I know what this is. I know what it's supposed to taste like. I can tell if it's good or not, I think is part of how it, what it comes down to. And like, you can tell me that this caviar is very good, but it's literally something I never eat and I don't know it. And okay, like, I guess, sure, fine.
Didn't United have something that they were doing with caviar and Bellinis?
They're going to for their new fake first, Polaris Studio.
Oh, that's right. For the new
season. But it's like a caviar bite.
Yes.
It's not caviar, it's a caviar bite. And that's the other thing. It's like, I don't know. It was in Malaga when we did our tour and we finished and everybody's like, could have probably done with one more stop, like, or one more bite of food. And I looked around, I was like, it's because we're Americans. We just eat too much.
It's true.
It's like, you know, United focuses on American travelers, so maybe they should have enough food for us. I don't know.
Foz, what do you think of caviar?
Not my thing at all.
Have you tried it?
I have.
Have you tried it on an airline?
I have one, Lufty First.
Lufty First, and just not for you.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of those things. Again, I think it's all about perception, and people see it as being like a high class option starter.
Yeah.
You know,
it might appeal to me more if I was an Instagram star.
I mean, maybe. You never know.
No. There's always time.
What are you eating right now?
I'm just drinking.
Oh, okay. Seth has his wine. I've got my coffee. It's good times. Yeah, I'm trying to think like what airplane meals really stand out to me.
I also, for the record, feel the same way about the lobster thermidor, which lobster should not have cheese on it, and I will die on that hill.
Well, that's a good question for you. So I have Newark, Singapore coming up soon.
Yeah.
What do you, because everyone's like the catering of Newark sucks.
Okay.
Like what do you get? Lobster thermidor is not actually on there.
Okay.
For Book the Cook. Do you go American? Do you go Asian noodles? What do you do?
Are you actually going to take the flight?
I mean, that's the plan.
Okay. Should we waste our time? You know, should we spend the time thinking about it if it's just a theoretical?
Should I waste your time? Come on now.
This is part of the game, Seth. You know that.
Also, the entire point of this podcast is wasting our time. So let's be honest about the situation.
Like I know the rule on the drop.
The actual options, right? Is it?
Oh, I'd have to log in.
I would see. I would avoid a chicken just because I think chicken on airplanes is, I mean, most chicken is terrible, but chicken on airplanes especially. Although if they've got a nice, there are certain exceptions to that. And I would avoid the mistake. So that doesn't leave you a ton of options.
Yeah. I mean, there's some of the Asian dishes, like there's some Asian dishes that are available. And I was like, oh, I could do that. Again, it's like 18 hours. So it's like I'm going to have plenty of time to eat food.
Sure.
So. Let me pull it up here. Manage booking.
I do remember when the producer and I did that trip a long time ago. We ate in the lounge with the SAS lounge in B when they did it. And then we got on board. They set out a dinner for us. You get on board. You have dinner on the plane. You go to sleep. And I woke up and halfway through the flight, they had some Dunkin' Donuts.
I remember you telling me that. Yeah.
Had picked up like that, like just like a box of Dunkin'. But like I went back and was like, you know, tired, drear, you know, weirded out, whatever, eye mask still on my forehead. I was like, I kind of need some food. Do you have any, like, what do you even have? And the flight attendant was like, well, you had this for your main and you pre-ordered this for your next meal. So why don't you have this in between? Because it'll make the most sense. And like, without looking at the paperwork or anything, she just looked at me. It's like, oh, Mr. Miller, this is what you should eat.
That's impressive.
And right, I mean, 100 passengers on the old 345 configuration, but still, I was, you know, at the time was just like, okay, sure. And then after the fact, realized how impressed I should be about the fact that they had figured that out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was the Newark Singapore a morning flight back then or a night flight?
Night flight.
Yeah. Now it's morning now.
Mm.
So here's the option. Grilled beef filet. He said that's the mistake. Don't skip that one. Char siu and wonton noodle soup. That's egg noodles and broth with honey glazed slow roasted pork.
Yep.
Grilled salmon filet with white wine sauce. Haricot vert, ratatouille, and then steamed chicken with Chinese pork sausage and a mushroom sauce with seasonal vegetables and steamed rice. That's the in-flight menu. And then they have Book the Cook.
Okay.
And the book to cook is like a burger, cheese ravioli, grilled shrimp and scallops, pan roasted veal cutlet with mushroom ragu, prawn pork dumpling soup, seafood congee, slow roasted beef fillet, which it's funny because they break that down as like, that's all cuisines. And then they have an Asian cuisine. And then they say, that's it. That's it. That's everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would probably do one of the two dumplings. I would, at some point during the 18 hours, actually probably try to have both of the noodle soups. Okay. I'm not a congee guy, so I would not do that. I generally would avoid a steamed chicken because I feel like there's no flavor in those.
Yeah.
But that was a dump. That was one of the dumplings, wasn't it?
No, it's with rice.
Okay. Yeah. Good. And then, yeah, how you described it, I think the char siu soup is probably my top choice. That was the char siu was the soup, right?
Yeah, it was like a soup with noodles, and then maybe the prawn pork dumpling noodle soup would be the next one.
Yeah, I would go with either of those.
So,
Roz?
I don't know. I'd probably just go with the beef.
Really?
Yeah.
The slow roasted one or the regular one?
Probably the regular.
There's three noodle dishes because then they have the lunch and it's braised beef brisket noodles. Yeah. Is another one. So yeah, I would probably go with that too.
Right, that's Texan. You kind of have to, right?
Yeah, have to see.
Get your brisket.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, I'd probably bring a meal on board for the first meal.
Why?
It's airplane food is still airplane food at the end of the day.
But it's also Newark Terminal B. What meal are you going to bring at a Terminal B that is going to beat anything on Singapore Airlines?
You can clear and see and have the bus drop you off at B.
What would you bring out of C?
Duncan. He'd bring Duncan.
No, I would bring something from outside. I would buy something at the airport.
Yeah. Anyway, it's fun question. All right, let's move on. I've derailed us enough. Starlux is coming to Prague.
First European destination.
First European route for them. I did not realize that the owner of Starlux is the son of the owner of Ava. Or the old owner of Ava. There's like a whole story behind
it. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would explain a lot.
Yeah. And he got like he wanted to take over Ava and then kind of like got kicked out and then started his own airline. So, it's good news for them. Is it, they doing it on a 350-900 or a 1000?
I did not look.
I don't know if it's loaded yet. I think it's a 900.
Okay. I was going to say,
where the hell are they the 1000s then? They ordered them. They're coming.
I mean, I think they're going to do New York or something with them.
Yeah.
And then Qantas is going to have Economy Plus.
Economy Plus. And they explicitly call it Economy Plus, which is amazing to me. I have to assume someone at United didn't trademark that in Australia the way they should have. And it is they announced this a while ago. It's finally actually, I think, an entered service last weekend. We're recording on Sunday. No. We're recording on Saturday, entered on Friday. I think it activated on the 6th. Starting on the A220s, the 321XLR, and the 738. Some of the 330s will be getting it by midsummer. And, you know, it's a decent chunk of the plane. I think the really interesting one is the... on the A220, it's only the two-seaters for six rows.
Okay.
It's a 2-3 layout, so there's also like, there's a ton of seat options now. So you have first class, you have economy plus front, which is the front row, economy plus regular, which is just regular economy plus. And then you have forward cabin one and forward cabin two. And those are like, depending on how forward in the plane it is, and you just pay extra to be closer to the front.
Is this only... So it's, you said it's on the 220s and the 321s.
220, 738, and 321.
Oh, okay. So it's on the 738 as well.
And what's kind of amazing to me is that they did it by rearranging pitch on board without removing any seats, best I can tell. On the 738, the front row has a published 51 inches of pitch, well more than the first class seats do.
Yeah.
That like to the absurd, why you wouldn't space the others out, but there's still, or put a seventh row of extra in behind somehow. But I think it has also maybe a little to do with window positioning on those planes and blocked windows. But at least on the 738s, it's basically the front half of the cabin plus the exit rows. On the 321 XLR, there's the front row of economy, the second row, and then it switches to four rows of forward seat one, two rows of forward seat two, the non-reclining row in front of the exit row that is just a regular seat, two rows of exit row, which is marked as economy plus, and then two rows of additional economy plus behind the exit row.
This is the most random.
And it lets them charge for the seats at the front of the plane that are just regular seats. Like on the one hand, looking at the map, you know, if you figure $20 to $30 a pop, or $15 to $20 a pop on a random route I looked at, it obviously is variable pricing based on route and whatever. But, you know, 36 seats of quote unquote forward seat, forward cabin, by $30 each is $1,000. So they get that. Plus, they still sell economy plus, but you got to walk further back
for most of them.
And the economy plus seats, they have extra legroom, all of them, but it's just not significant, is what you're saying. It's not like.
No, do I have it written down here? I think it's typical pitch is 30. Most economy plus is 34. Exit rows are 38. And front is 39 or 51.
Okay.
So it's,
it's a lot.
Here's United. It's the same, like, much like the name, it's the same pitch shift as United.
That's beyond random.
But it's like looking at the seat map and seeing that they're putting some in behind the exit row to not have to take seats out and sort of shift things around, but still make more money was kind of amazing.
I wonder how it works for Emeralds on Oneworld.
So it is complimentary at booking for Platinum and Platinum One, including Qantas, Qantas, and Pierre, which is their top two tiers.
Yep.
And gold can select it at 24 hours from departure. No indication of partners, at least in the press release.
Interesting. I'm going to try and book something. Do we know when it's going to be live?
It is live today. It was yesterday, the 6th.
I'm going to try and book something. Yeah.
I love this. Real time, Steven's just booking and canceling flights.
I mean, why not, right?
We give the listeners what they want.
That's right.
You know, it's an experience. We're doing this together. Yeah. I just think it's interesting to me that like they've moved this route. I think the commoditization of just seating is, I mean, it's not anything new, but it's strange. And I feel like people feel like nickel and dimed. I wonder if this has been more tested, with markets, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is, has it been tested in the Australia market? It's certainly been well tested in the U.S. market.
Yeah.
Speaking of giving the listeners what we want, as we wrap up the episode here, two things. One, Foz ran into one of our, I was at the JetBlue 25 for 25. They had a party in Boston this week for folks who completed. They had like 200 people at the Dell Technologies suite at Fenway Park, which was a pretty nice venue. Neat event. Some interesting conversations there, but Foz, one of our listeners, pulled me aside to say hi and suggest wanted me to reach out to you. He said he started listening to us because he used to listen to you on the Upgrade podcast.
Wow. Well, that's a nod to the past.
Yeah. I was like, I had to like think back how long that's been, but yeah. So there was that. I thought that was interesting. Also, I want to say a shout out to some of our new patrons who have joined in recent weeks. Alex, Riley M., James H., Michael, I don't know how we pronounce J-O-E-N, John, Joanne P., and someone who had the foresight to enter their name in Patreon as name.
Nice. I'm surprised you were let into this event.
So was I.
You like showed up thinking, I'm not going to go into this. They're not going to let me in.
I think it's just the comms team that doesn't like me. And I think it's just a couple people on the comms team that don't like me because I met some folks there. I started chatting and like we had a great conversation. The guy from the loyalty team that I talked to, we had a great conversation. Marty St. George, who was the president, who was an old friend, like big hug when I walked in. It was great. I was going to save it for the bonus topic, but I'll share it now because I'm riffing. Marty gave a speech about like, you know, talking about the promotion and sort of had a throwback to the All You Can Jet days.
Mm-hmm.
Which was their 2009, 2010 promotions they did of 30 days all you can fly for $600. And he's like, did anyone here do all you can jet? And it was quiet for a half second. And then I was in the back there. I'm like, but you already know me, Marty. He's like, okay, thanks, Seth. But I was the only person of the 200 who had done all you can jet. And then he asked, does anybody know what all you can jet is? And no one knew what it was. So that made me feel pretty old. Not gonna lie.
I mean, it's cool. Yeah. I have to go through like the whole booking flow to get this, so I'm not gonna worry about it. Anyway, and then the lastly on Qantas before we go to the bonus, Qantas is bailing on Jetstar Japan, so they're pulling out their investment.
Yeah, an announcement of intent for strategic shareholder change.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, they are selling off their share to and. A new LCC structure will be set up in Japan. JAL is the other main owner.
Okay.
And some other companies locally will provide some funding and whatever. They're also refreshing the brand from Jetstar to a new brand, quote, further establishing itself as a leading Japanese LCC under this new brand and identity.
Huh.
Everybody will keep their jobs, yada, yada, yada. Largest LCC at Narita, and they're going to grow at Narita is the plan.
Interesting. Okay.
And a new brand will be announced in October of this year based on the published schedule, subject to change. And June 2027 is when the divestiture will complete. Currently, Qantas holds a third of the shares and JAL is 50%.
Wow. Okay. Well, interesting.
Yeah.
Good times.
I don't think it matters that much, but... it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's happening.
It is. All right. Well, anything else you guys want to chat about before we jump to the bonus topics? This is going to be AA back in Venezuela, or wants to be back in Venezuela, and another airline as well. And then ATC washout. We're going to talk about that a little bit for our Patreon supporters. If you're not a Patreon supporter, you can become one if you'd like. Or if not, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.